You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for October 20th, 2015, and episode number 237. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. What's coming up tonight? Well, this week's news includes the devil went down to Jersey, Bigfoot from another dimension, UFOs over Ohio, how not to decorate for Halloween, parallel universes open up in China, and next week in Switzerland. And we'll talk some electrical science, plus conferences, conventions, and much, much more. I don't always like to talk about myself, but this is the silly season, and it's a busy time for a lot of us in the paranormal, those of us who are authors or do public speaking or anything like that. And I just want to give a little shout-out to a show I was on Sunday night on October 18th. I was on a show called Sunday Night Dead from 9 to 11 with hosts Matthew Slozer and Luana Kurtz. That was a very fun show. It was a two-hour show, obviously. And it was a lot of fun just to kind of your first appearance on anybody else's show is the general shake hands, get to know you kind of thing where you just tell people what you did, how you got to the point where you're at or how you got started and so on and so forth. And those are sometimes get boring, but they are still a lot of fun. And it really shows you how the person putting on that program, how good of an interviewer they are. And he was a very good interviewer, very relaxed and very into it, and did a little bit of research on me. So he knew what books I had written and everything else that I had done. So that was Sunday night. And tonight, obviously, is the Paranormal News Insider, where we talk about the paranormal news, things that are going on all over the world right here. And tomorrow night, I'm on another show. I'll be on a show called Spirit of Life, weekly church service and live metaphysical radio broadcast at 10 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to be talking about anomalous phenomena, pretty much the same stuff we're talking about tonight. And then Friday, I'm get to meet a friend of mine, a gentleman named Jeff Cole, who's the author of Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator. He is going to be signing his book and talking to the general public at the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Mentor, Ohio. And that's, if you don't know where Mentor, Ohio is, it's about 30 miles east of Cleveland, along Route 2 there, up by Lake Erie. That's where I grew up, and that's where Jeff Cole spent some time investigating. So it's going to be interesting to kind of go back to where I grew up. I live about 30 miles south of there now. And it'd be neat to compare some notes with Jeff and just get to know him. That book, if you're looking for it, is under Jeff Scott Cole. And you can find that at barnesandnoble.com or anywhere else. I'll put a link in the chat room there if you want to check out his book. And, geez, next week going to be at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio. And that's my seventh consecutive year being there. I'll be talking probably for about 2 hours at least. So I've kind of got a little busy week ahead of me. And I'll also, hopefully Friday, I'm going to go meet Jeff. He's there from 7 to 9, but I'm going to duck out a little early and try to get back here, back where you're listening to me now live. I've been invited to take part in the Friday night roundtable at 9 o'clock Eastern here on CJMarsRadio.com, talking about domestic violence. Very touchy subject and kind of a hard subject to really discuss because of, a lot of emotions. But I'm looking forward to that. I have a few things to talk about with that. So that's going to be interesting. Again, that's Friday night right here. Same time, same chat room. Don't miss it. It's going to be fun for everybody to kind of get some stuff off of their chest and talk about things that are probably bottled up. It's always good to talk about these things. A lot of shows don't tackle things like this. They just talk about stuff that people want to hear. You know, you got the shock jocks that talk about sex and violence and things like that, but those aren't really that hard of things to talk about. Because we all talk about stuff like that. But it'll be an interesting show, and I'm looking forward to participating in that. But we're here now. We're here live at the Paranormal News Insider, and let's get to the news. Well, one of the news items that I led off with talking about was the devil went down to Jersey, and somebody it broke last week, and the image of a purported Jersey devil was sent into a news blog called NJ.com. I believe somebody in the chat room brought up that story last week. It was either, I think it was Mars. It might have been Roger. I'm not sure. Either way, I did see the story, and I debated talking about it here last week. It was obvious a fake to me, but the story was kind of undeveloped. It wasn't really circulating all that much, and I thought it would just fizzle away like some of those stories kind of do. However, the story has remained popular and has gone pretty viral after the first couple of days. It's gone pretty viral and still circulating quite a bit right now. So a few of my first impressions were also picked up by a lot of other people. Now, the story goes that a man named Dave Black was driving home in Galloway, New Jersey, when he spotted what he thought was a llama near the road. You know, because when I drive around, I see llamas all the time. I think I've only seen one llama by the side of the road in my entire life. And I already knew that the llama was there, and I went searching for it. Anyway, suddenly this llama-like creature spread its leathery wings and took flight over a golf course. Okay. Black was able to snap a few pictures, but of course only one of them came out. The photograph shows what looks like a goat with wings in the air with a line of trees behind it. Well, then that's when the story began to really develop. A video was then sent in to NJ.com by a reader named Emily, who was traveling through Leeds Point. She tries to add credibility to the video by stating she is a middle school teacher who moonlights as an algebra tutor for high school students. Seems legit. The video shows the dreaded New Jersey devil flying quickly across the screen as the person filming it lets out a quiet little gasp. I guess just a little dramatic interlude there. It's just something to add to the drama. It's just something you see a lot of when people do these little fake videos or hoax videos. But really, let's dig into this story a little deeper. In order to get a better understanding of what is going on in New Jersey, we have to look at each of these pieces of evidence separately. Now, the article kind of bunches them together and says, well, not only do we have this picture, but now we have this video. It's all coming together. The evidence is clear. Well, it's not clear. These things are completely different things, and we can't tie them together to validate any of these experiences. Well, one quick observation is about these two pieces is that when looking at them together, these two creatures in them don't look anything alike. And to me, that's the biggest part of all this. The video is actually more traditional to the Jersey Devil in shape, where the photograph looks like a stiff, dead goat that's tossed in the air, or somebody had mentioned a pinata to me. The photograph is not very convincing for a couple of simple observations about the photograph itself. Now, I've mentioned in the past that I'm actually the executive director for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association. And within Paranexus, we've had it's called the Anomalous Evidence Advisory Board. And those of us who have a lot of experience with examining evidence are part of this advisory board, and we examine photographs, EVPs, video, all sorts of evidence submitted from all over the world, trying to disseminate what's going on in the photograph using a variety of means and measures. So I'm very used to seeing photographs and determining what's really going on in the photograph, not just what is in the photograph, but what's going on with the picture itself, what kind of camera settings. I can pretty much tell you what kind of camera is used by just looking at a picture. And this comes through experience. This comes through using a variety of cameras and examining photographs such as these on a constant basis. Now, Sharon Hill from DoubtfulNews.com states that the basic observations of the photograph, which are the same that I observed, the animal seems stiff as it's stuffed or not even alive. The wings are extremely small for a creature of its size and would probably not lift a creature of that size off the ground. It's just not proportionate whatsoever. The next observation is the photograph itself. Now, the lighting is dark, and one would expect to see the creature blur due to movement, especially the wings, which would be, Jesus, this creature and proportionately small wings would have to be fluttering pretty fast. But the creature seems to be just hanging in the air. Yet, there should be some motion blur due to the low lighting. Now, this alone should be enough to expose this as a fake. But in looking at how Dave Black attempted to explain the photograph by first stating it was not a fake or photoshopped is not convincing. If you're trying to tell me that it's not fake up front before you give the story, there's going to be a little doubt, not just shadow of a doubt, but an entire eclipse of doubt. Now, his story is very typical of the trend of email-supported stories. Unfortunately, far too often paranormal bloggers will post a story submitted by email as a legitimate story despite some obvious issues with the story and very, very little investigation or research either into the person or into the story or even any ongoing dialogue other than getting excited to actually break any sort of story. So one of the reasons why I don't break a whole lot of stories, I've probably received maybe 200 or 300 of these types of emails, and I ignore just about every single one of them. Because as you do investigations, as you research these stories or you examine these people, a lot of these stories fall apart real quick and they go away. And then they ask you not to post anything. And then they go to somebody else and they post it. So if you do a little homework and you do a little research and you ask the right questions, a lot of times these people just kind of go away. Now, it essentially, this story just, it morphs into clickbait, a clickbait situation where a person is basically attempting to generate income by click-throughs on the story itself by attempting to make the story believable or present it as factual to generate more interest to get it to go viral. It's an unfortunate side effect of social media. You know, we all pass along stories and pictures and memes and all sorts of things. A lot of times we don't do the research on it, but they're entertaining nonetheless, and we just get the gears running. But this creates some bad things, and that's people trying to generate income through these stories. I used to be a writer for The Examiner. I thought it would add to my credibility as a writer, not just writing books, but also writing blogs and writing for a, kind of a professional organization. But I saw other people that were writing for Examiner, and they were just copying, pasting stories that were in the media and things that I would be talking about here on the Paranormal News Insider. And I just wondered why these people were doing this, and just to come to find out that they were all excited about their click-throughs and how much money they were generating by writing. You know, where's the fun in that? I mean, it should be about the subject that you're writing about, not how much money you can make. I mean, the money would be nice, but I can honestly tell you I didn't make very much money from The Examiner at all, nor was I really looking to. I could care less. It was just about adding to credibility, my own credibility as a writer, giving myself some experience at writing, learning a little bit about how to write stories like that from their background and how to write stories for them. But nonetheless, I think there's a very big issue with this, and it really affects paranormal bloggers. Now, Sharon Hill kind of outlines a little few things that you should follow from her I Doubt It WordPress site. if you're going to be a journalist or a paranormal blogger or anything. The first thing here is state that the email submissions from readers are not reliable as news. You rarely see that anywhere. Rarely to see that disclaimer on most of these stories. Now, every now and again I do, but you rarely see this. That it's not checked for validity and it's actually not proof of anything, and that is likely a fun prank. Now, this would avoid a lot of these stories going viral, unfortunately, but at least we would know that up front that we don't have to question it. Now, a lot of people automatically, the knee-jerk reaction anytime anything incredible, any kind of incredible video or photograph, you're always going to have at least half the people go, it's fake, right away, without even really examining it very closely. And of course, the other half of the people are going to believe it beyond the shadow of a doubt or create some sort of conspiracy theory as to why it's true or whatnot. So you always have both sides of that story. The second thing is avoid clickbaiting by presenting a you decide sensational story. And third, be clear that the claim has serious flaws and should not be treated as news. Well, that's the hard thing for a lot of paranormal bloggers because they think that they're news reporters and they're breaking these stories, although they're just getting their leg pulled. And then they in turn pull the reader's leg themselves. And the stories end up being these debated hot topics that go back and forth. And unfortunately, a lot of these people just scamper away from their own stories and until they can find the next biggest thing. Now, Sharon Hill is a skeptic, but she's also a knowledgeable scientist who constantly offers an objective view of stories like the one we're talking about. So now that we've shredded this photograph, let's talk about the video. Now, the video itself is not very convincing either. The creature seems to be only a few feet from the person filming it, and it appears only as a black shape with wings fluttering as it floats by and slips away with little or no sound. Now, I turned the sound all the way up and heard the lady gasping, but you don't really hear anything of a creature. You would expect something flapping its wings that fast would make some sort of sound. Now, again, you know, theorists, conspiracy theorists will say, oh, that's because it's an interdimensional creature or whatever. That's one of the big themes tonight is interdimensional type of things. But I don't think that has any weight to it at all to say that it's an interdimensional creature. Now, it's not exactly what one would expect from an encounter such as this. And despite the backstory, it's more than likely just a digital manipulation. Now, whether or not this person who submitted the video is the person who created it, that's an entirely different question. So this person may think that they've seen something and were, I don't know, maybe somebody got a hold of their camera and sent them the video that they thought that they filmed. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. Benjamin Radford, who is also a noted skeptic, and he was the subject of one of my books of the week. I think that was the first book of the week, Scientific Paranormal Investigations. That was September 22nd, book of the week. So Radford offered a little background on the Jersey Devil from his Discovery News blog, where he covered the story. Radford states, quote, most accounts suggesting that the creature has a horse-like face with horns sprouting from the top of its head. It's often said to walk on two legs and have hooves. The overall body shape resembles a kangaroo or a goat or an ape, though it also has wings like a bat. The Jersey Devil legend is said to date back to the 1700s. Now, there are several variations of the legend, but the most common version recounts how a woman named Mother Leeds, believed to have been the wife of an Almanac publisher named Daniel Leeds, gave birth to her 13th child on, wait for it, a dark and stormy night. Some said she practiced witchcraft and that on the night she bore the unholy fruit of a satanic tryst. It emerged like an ordinary baby but soon changed form, growing wings, hooves, and a horse-like head. It flew into the air with a blood-curdling shriek, killing a midwife in the process, and headed toward the woods. To this day, it is said, with most straight faces around campfires, the horrible monster still lurks in the woods. Unquote. Well, Radford goes on to explain that the first sightings reported in any newspaper did not occur until 1909, where the version of the creature began as we know it, as described by Professor Brian Regal of New Jersey's Keene University, with bat-like wings, horse head, claws, and a general air of a dragon, became standardized. That same year, a Philadelphia businessman claimed to have captured the Jersey Devil and had it on display. The creature turned out to be a kangaroo painted green with rabbit fur-covered wings. No word on how the rabbit fur came to be glued on those wings, but anyway, that's a whole different that's a whole lot more elaborate than what we're looking at currently. The author of the article followed up on it, the original article on NJ.com, that is, and admitted she knew the original photograph as well as the story was not real. The problem was when she added the video that, quote, all hell broke loose, unquote, and everyone from Huffington Post to Good Morning America came asking for more information. She states she wrote the piece with the same intention as her other articles on her Paranormal Corner column she writes for NJ.com that covers many topics, including her investigations with her group, Jersey Unique Minds Paranormal Society. And for all of you that are running that through your head, yes, that spells jumps. How creative. Oh, boy. So I really, that story doesn't hold much water, the video and the photo. Yeah. If I had the sound of a toilet flushing, I would play that right now. So let's get to the next story here, and that is on Bigfoot. The idea of Bigfoot being a interdimensional traveler is gaining some popularity as a theory. The idea of Bigfoot being an alien, or at least a traveler between times or worlds, can be traced back to 1973, where Bigfoot investigators described orange orbs that were seemingly attached to Bigfoot sightings. Now, this information hit the paranormal newsstands due to the recent Greater New England UFO Conference that took place in Leominster, Massachusetts, over the weekend. Now, over the course of the last couple of decades, UFO and Bigfoot hunters have slowly come together on information. These two fields are typically at odds with each other, and both dislike the ghost field as well. Now it seems that a lot of people have begun to branch out into other areas or have attracted interest from different camps. The interdimensional theories for Bigfoot and UFOs overlap perfectly and have gained a lot of momentum in recent years despite some ridiculous stories of proof, supposed proof. There's a lot of reasoning going on with the alien theory, as this will purportedly take care of the "okay, where are the bodies?" question, as well as why solid evidence cannot be gathered. Now, renowned Bigfoot hunter Bill Brock was the first to speak on the interdimensional theories of Bigfoot at the conference. He stated, quote, "It's a known fact that human beings and Neanderthals were battling pretty heavily 35,000 years ago. I believe that they split at that time and went off into the woods." Well, under Brock's theory, Neanderthals developed as a species parallel to human beings. But while humans were developing technology in cities, Neanderthals were learning to live in the forest and in hiding from their enemies. Another of the tough questions are seemingly answered with this theory: why are they so hard to find? Tens of thousands of years of experience with camouflage, Brock noted. Brock also said, quote, "Like us, they became masters of their own domain, but their domain was the forest. They know how to hide," unquote. Well, he also says they actually went beyond being masters of their own domain, but that leaves the bodies, right? Well, not so, Brock says, because Neanderthals were and are cannibals. It's a pretty bold statement, seeing that there's really nothing to back that up with. By eating the bodies, they do two things, he says. First, they feed themselves. Second, they dispose of the bodies. Well, it's one thing to propose a Bigfoot is a natural being in the forests, but a big theory about giant hairy creatures that are visiting Earth as aliens is a little less credible to me. Another less credible thing is trying to write history in a way that satisfies the theory created to explain the difficulties of discovering Bigfoot. Sherlock Holmes once said, It is a capital mistake to theorize before one has data. Insensibly, one begins to twist facts to suit theories instead of theories to suit facts. The fact here is, despite the large number of witnesses and evidence, Bigfoot has yet to be known to exist. Intradimensional travel is not known to exist or even possible with carbon-based life forms or any other potentially type of life form, or even gravity so far. Of course, that's a different story that we're going to talk about tonight. Trying to create scenarios based on these theories does not provide any more credibility to them and does not make them any more convincing. And that's just my opinion. Now, a lot of this stems from not just, you know, quantum theory or string theory or interdimensional travel or you know, even UFO people and Bigfoot people getting together. This is about the frustration that people are getting in the Bigfoot field as far as trying to find a credible way to explain why they can't find Bigfoot, why they can't get solid evidence. And this is how they're trying to prove it to science, by saying that this is an interdimensional creature. And it's almost as if Bigfooters and UFO people are trying to get together on this and trying to find a common ground or find a common argument to try to help support each other against science. But again, in my opinion, I think this kind of falls flat and they're kind of hurting themselves a little bit more than I think they're really helping themselves. But, you know, it's just one of those things that if you can't figure it out, just make something up that sounds good. I guess that's what they're kind of trying to do here. But unfortunately, again, it does kind of hurt the credibility of people that are out there. And I think when you're talking about frustration creating these theories, I think it's also where the hoaxes and the misinformation comes from. Granted, you're going to get a lot of people that are out there for attention, but you're also going to get misinformation that attempts to explain things or attempts to give credence to that in the form of evidence, such as photographs, videos, or anything else. Not saying that everything out there is fake or is a hoax. I personally believe that the Patterson-Gimlin film is probably the only realistic piece of evidence of Bigfoot ever discovered, other than some scant tracks, although a lot of tracks in the 1960s and even in the early 1970s were admitted hoaxes and were more than likely hoaxes. And of course, in this day and age, pretty much everyone's out for fame and fortune and attention by creating fake evidence. But, you know, that's just how it is in the world of the paranormal. And that's why I'm here, to try to clean up a lot of this belief systems and a lot of these stories, trying to bring you the truth from the inside so that you understand when these hoaxes are being perpetrated, so you can be more knowledgeable about what's going on in the world of the paranormal. And that's the goal here on the Paranormal News Insider, is to keep it real, find the reality, problem solve, give you the reality of what's going on behind all of these things. Now, before I got UFO news coming up, and before I do that, I do want to mention that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, on the CJ Mars Radio Network. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, I've been trying to get a hold of the MUFON UFO sighting statistics for September, but for some reason, they're not answering my emails. I've not gotten any kind of information about what's going on with the sighting statistics for September. And, you know, October's almost over already. Kind of crazy. So I'm trying to get that information out to you, hopefully sooner than later. But I think they're kind of backlogged with their big MUFON symposium that took place in September. And they're all coming down off a paranormal high from that. So anyway, UFO news. This kind of story is very typical of UFO stories. Somebody sees something in the sky, and they automatically assume UFO. Well, UFO does mean unidentified flying object. And that means that it's not easily identifiable or not instantly identifiable. But it's the same to me as something that's paranormal. Just because you can't explain it doesn't mean it's paranormal. Just because you don't know exactly what's flying in the sky does not make it unidentifiable. To you, maybe it is, but to somebody else, it might be. So what am I talking about? Well, a video has surfaced on Facebook that shows strange red lights. I mean, hey, it's on Facebook. It's got to be real, right? I mean, nothing is ever wrong on Facebook. We'd be a little sarcastic in this story, but anyway. A video has surfaced on Facebook that shows strange red lights in the sky over the Middletown, Ohio Regional Airport on Saturday, October 17th. Now, Middletown is in southwest Ohio, north of Cincinnati. The video uploaded to Facebook by Mike Brinkley is just over a minute long and has been viewed around 50,000 times and shared over 1,500 times when I last checked yesterday. I'm sure it's probably a lot higher than that now. I found this video posted by a friend of mine on Facebook. I watched the video and then merely typed in Middletown Airport on Google. Google suggested Middletown Airport skydiving, so I clicked on that link. From there, I easily found the solution to the story that explained that there was a night dive that night where skydivers had red lights on as a safety measure. Gene Newsom reported that there were 18 divers involved in the jump on Saturday night. The lights were made to be visible about 4 miles away, and Newsom also states that these after-dark jumps happen frequently, but people still report the strange lights in the sky. Now, it's the first time I've seen a story out of Middletown, Ohio, but it's interesting that he notes that people have called the airport about these lights before. Now, you think if you lived in the area, you might get fooled once, maybe twice, but I think after a while, you kind of know what's going on around, you know. Now, I understand people being confused about the lights, but if I were to post this on social media, I would also be the first one on the lookout for some sort of explanation about the lights so I could provide the answer for my viewers. In a number of posts I saw on the video, no one shared the link I found within seconds of looking for it. Now, while I do pride myself on my research skills, it was just too easy to find the answer, and even entering Middletown Lights, I found the link to the solution. And I guess people just believe everything they read on social media without critical thought. Well, I did put the link in live chat there, and I've also posted it to the Paranormal News Insider Facebook page at facebook.com/ParanewsInsider. And just a reminder on the social media front, since we're bashing it currently, the Paranormal News Insider can be followed on Facebook at the aforementioned site at facebook.com/ParanewsInsider, also on Twitter with @ParanewsInsider, as well as on Google Plus at +ParanewsInsider or plus.google.com/+ParanewsInsider. I hope you're not trying to write that down as I say it because you'll probably break your hand. And of course, you can find information on conferences, conventions, as well as listen to the archives of the Paranormal News Insider. And not just the last few that you've heard here on cjmarsradio.com, but all of the ones I've been doing since 2008 by going to the home for all things anomalous at paranewsinsider.com. You can also find all of the links to all the social media that I display some of these stories and some other information on. Now, the Twitter account is tied into Facebook, so anything that I put on Facebook automatically pops up on Twitter. The G+ page, Google+, I kind of do really haven't done much. I actually just started it not that long ago, so it's kind of fresh for me, and I'm going to be posting some little different things on there because it's kind of a little different of a social media kind of thing. So just kind of handcrafting some stories or some things to that. But all of them will have obvious links to the archive of the show from the night before, as well as a link to the book of the week, which we'll be talking about a little later on. Hopefully I can get to it here. So that's it. ParanewsInsider.com. Check it out if you haven't already. We're set for other news. And this next story is a little spooky, to put it bluntly. Maybe bluntly is not the right word. Anyway, Tammy Dixon was on her way to drop off her daughter at school in the morning when she saw what she thought was a Halloween prop, a dummy, hanging on a fence. Now, she told her daughter it was probably a prank on construction workers who were working close to a home in Chillicothe, Ohio. The construction workers went to move what they also thought was a Halloween prop of a body on a fence line and were startled when they realized the body was real. The victim was 31-year-old Rebecca Cade, who died of blunt force injuries to the head. It is thought that Cade became stuck on the fence by the sleeve and then was bludgeoned to death with a large rock said to be the size of a grapefruit that was found close by. 27-year-old Donnie Coconore Jr. has allegedly confessed to the crime and is being held on a $2 million bond. Cade reportedly has had drug and alcohol issues, as well as learning disabilities. Kind of a scary story. And Chillicothe, Ohio is also dealing with a murdering spree, what they think is a serial killer. But this, they know, is not attached to that. Through already investigating the crime, they know that it's not attached to that. But it's really a sad story and scary story the more I kind of read about it. And usually a story I wouldn't talk about, but it's kind of grim and gruesome, and it does kind of fit the Halloween scene. Unfortunately, it is dealing with somebody's death, an unfortunate death, and there was some domestic violence issues with this couple. So this highlights the severity of things that can happen if people don't get help or people aren't aware of what's going on around them. And we're going to move on now from that depressing story into probably the most viral story of the week. Now, you thought the Jersey Devil was the most viral story. Well, you were wrong. Maybe you know what this story is, and you might not know what it is, but as soon as I tell you, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I saw that. Well, the most viral story of the week in the paranormal was – it did take place, I should say, over the skies of China. Thousands of people reported seeing a strange city floating in the sky, complete with skyscrapers, in the city of Foshan in the Guangdong province of China. Numerous photographs and videos documented the strange event that left some wondering if a parallel universe, there it is again, opened up in the skies. If that wasn't enough, just a few days later, a similar event happened over the skies of Jiangxi, China. Conspiracy theorists were quick to make several accusations about the event in an attempt to explain what was happening. YouTube channel Paranormal Crucible stated that this event could be, quote, the result of a Project Blue Beam test, unquote. Well, Project Blue Beam is a prolific conspiracy theory which believes NASA will one day simulate an alien invasion of Earth or second coming of Christ through holograms. Paranormal Crucible also added that the buildings in the clouds could also be, quote, a temporal vortex, a possible parallel universe materializing briefly in our own reality, unquote. Huh. Well, They also made the assumption that, quote, it is also possible, considering China's technological advancements, that a top-secret holographic technology was tested over a heavily populated area in an effort to gauge the public reaction, unquote. Wow. Well, these are all nice guesses, but unfortunately, the reality is just a little less exciting. This event, while rare, actually happens often in China for some reason, but is known to occur most often in polar regions and is known as a Fata Morgana. No, this isn't some sort of French socialite, but it is the name for a natural mirage caused by weather. Fata Morgana is the Italian name for Morgan Le Fay, as well as other names, as the enchantress for the King Arthur legends. Fata Morgana can be seen on land or sea and involves the optical distortion and inversion of distant objects, such as boats, which can appear as skyscrapers because the images become stacked. Now, in the case of what we saw here in China, these were actual buildings that were stacked and added together. Paranormal Crucible made a comment about that there was threes of this and threes of that, and they thought that was part of the hologram, an issue with the hologram or a computer problem. But in all actuality, it was just how it actually proved that this was the optical distortion. Now, this happens when rays of light bend as they pass through air of different temperatures, such as in a heat haze. Now, the real thing here is that while it's quite a sight and does not happen often, it has been noted every few years, especially here in the paranormal news arena. I know I've personally covered at least two or three stories of Fata Morgana happening all over the world. It doesn't just happen in China or in the Arctic regions, but it's happened all over, a few stories on the West Coast. And they're also confused with UFO sightings, as the mirage comes from below the horizon and makes an object appear in the sky. And a Fata Morgana can also trick radar signals into perceiving objects floating as well. Now we're going to stick with the whole parallel universe kind of theme. As we talk about one of the things that I quite frequently talk about here, I follow this kind of any story, I should say, that develops from this next thing topic I'm going to talk about here, because I think it has some scientific credibility, although it's just dealing with theoretical stuff, and it's an awful lot of money being used for a very large concrete structure under the ground. But this deals with CERN, the Large Hadron Collider. It's the subject, once again, of opening up black holes, and this time trying to create, yes, a parallel universe. Now, I don't normally copy things that are on a web page or, you know, read them verbatim unless I quote it, but it'd be really hard to paraphrase a number of articles and try to kind of get my thoughts and ideas about what they're trying to explain without losing probably a little bit of explanation. The website phys.org, that's phys.org, released an article back in March of this year that outlined tests that would be conducted this fall as well as into next year. The site stated in a new paper published in Physics Letters B, Ahmad Farag Ali and Mir Fazil and Mohammed M. Khalil explain that the key to finding parallel universes may come from detecting miniature black holes at a certain energy level. The detection of mini black holes would indicate the existence of extra dimensions, which would support string theory and related models that predict the existence of extra dimensions as well as parallel universes. Normally, when people think of multiverses, they think of the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, where every possibility is actualized, Fazil told phys.org. This cannot be tested, so it is philosophy and not science. That is not what we mean by parallel universes. What we mean is real universes in extra dimensions. As gravity can flow out of our universe into the extra dimensions, such as a model can be tested by the detection of mini black holes at the Large Hadron Collider. We have calculated the energy at which we expect to detect these mini black holes in gravity's rainbow, which is a new theory. If we do detect mini black holes at this energy, then we will know both gravity's rainbow and extra dimensions are correct. This information, again, taken from phys.org from an article published back in March of this year. The Large Hadron Collider has been warming up in the last few weeks for some interesting tests, but I've seen no mention of these tests that this article described on their website that supposedly is occurring next week, but they are certainly on the horizon. And like I've said, I've always kept a close eye on the Large Hadron Collider since theories of physics can be tested, and what we think we know about the known universe or even perception itself may eventually be challenged. Some think that a black hole may open up during one of these tests and swallow the Earth as, you know, a whole. And while CERN states this is next to impossible, the good news is if it does happen, we probably won't even realize it happened. And another story here, researchers have published their work in the journal Nature Communications that outlines their work on establishing how cells can detect electrical signals. The experiments conducted at the University of California Davis Institute for Regenerative Cures, easy for me to say, has found the first actual sensor mechanism that allows a living cell to detect an electrical field. The basic summary states, quote, "A variety of animals are able to sense and react to electrical fields, and living human cells will move along an electrical field, for example, in wound healing," unquote. They discovered that a combination of a protein and a polyamine, which are molecules within a cell, were needed for signaling to occur. Without all of the technical details, it seems that these researchers are leaning toward understanding how animals are able to detect electrical fields or are able to harness fields for wound repair. When ghost researchers talk about validation of the existence of ghosts, they tend to think that a photograph, or EVP, will be the holy grail. Their photograph alone will prove that ghosts exist despite the hundreds of years of scientific inquiry into the subject. Well, unfortunately, while science is a series of slow steps with sudden leaps every now and again, the explanation of ghosts will more than likely be discovered by scientists, such as the ones in this story. Determining how electrical signals are transmitted in cells could be the first step in determining how a body experiences a haunting or intelligent communications. While this is obviously not the goal with this experiment, it could be one direction in the future that may help to lead to the discovery of how the living person is able to connect to place memories embedded in the environment. Now, I'm often asked what I believe ghosts are beyond the basic definitions. And I often recite the work of parapsychology, but I do not believe that these connections are physical entities or they would have been discovered a long time ago. I believe that ghosts are merely a connection from our living presence to the environment that somehow is able to store memories, experiences, and even personalities or personality traits of people who have passed away or may even still be alive. These connections allow us to see into the past and somehow connect to these experiences for a short while when you're in the right frame of connection. While many hold on to the notion that ghosts are made of energy, that's an extremely weak argument, as everything in the universe is made of energy, so it's not a leap to say that. Many also think that current scientific laws or theories explain ghosts, such as the law of thermodynamics, but actually those laws actually prove that ghosts do not exist and would provide evidence. Ghosts are paranormal, which means beyond normal explanation, and science has yet to have any sort of validation for any aspect of their existence or our connection to the environmental factors that creates a connection. Experiments like this one at UC Davis are a small stepping stone towards basic discoveries of the world around us that are meant to explain specific details, but this small step may one day provide a larger picture. And lastly, if you don't see Marty McFly and Doc Brown fly into their into town in their DeLorean tomorrow for Back to the Future Day, well, you can stay up late and see some flashes of the past. The Orionid meteor shower will be peaking tomorrow night through Thursday morning. The best time to view them will be just before sunrise on Thursday morning. Obviously, you do want to be looking towards the Orion constellation, as this is where the debris field will be coming from. The Orionid meteors are debris from Halley's Comet, which I'm sure we're all familiar with. The Orionids will probably show weaker activity than usual this year, says Bill Cook of the NASA Meteoroid Environments Office at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. He also says bits of comet dust hitting the atmosphere will probably give us about a dozen meteors per hour. That's not too bad, but it always hurts my neck. But if you live in a place that is cloudy, like in Ohio, pretty much every night this time of the year is cloudy, or if you have a lot of light pollution, you can check out a live stream of the night sky through NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. That is if it's not cloudy there as well. The link I'll put up in here in the chat room, and it's a Ustream link, and that is get that for you, Ustream.com or I'm sorry, ustream.tv/channel/NASA-MSFC. So if, again, if you want to check out the meteor shower and you don't want to go outside or it's cloudy, check it out. The next big meteor shower will peak from midnight until dawn on November 18th, which will be the Leonid shower. Now, a lot of these are sometimes, there'll be a big spike in UFO sightings, and that's why, another reason why I like to get my hands on the sighting statistics from MUFON. Book of the week. Let's get to that real quick before we run out of time. Now, we've talked a lot about parallel universes and different things. And the book of the week this week kind of touches on the subject as well as the paranormal. I had to dig deep into my little bookcase here. I have books all over the place. I could probably open my own shop here. It's good to hear the weather will be clear down in Huntsville. The Holographic Universe is the book of the week. Now, I've done like four straight ghost books, so I had to change gears sometime. And this week, with the theme being parallel universes and different dimensions and things, I felt that the Holographic Universe would be a good book to mention tonight. It's a little bit of an older book. My book is actually a first edition from 1992, I believe. I can't find the page. Yeah, 92. Now, there's a newer edition available online that you can get. And I'll post that one in the chat room here, and I'll post that on the ParanewsInsider.com or Paranews Insider Facebook feed, as well as the feed for Google+. Now, this book is it's really interesting. It's heavy in theories about holograms being not only our brains but the entire universe, and how all of these theories, the way Michael Talbot kind of paints this picture of holograms and holographic universe and how our mind is holographic, he kind of builds towards the paranormal. And it's interesting. It's an interesting read. And if you get a hold of this book, it's really not that expensive from what I'm looking at here online. You can get the paperback from $10 and the hardcover for $8.50. You can get them new and used, or used probably a lot cheaper. I have the paperback version. I think I got it at a used bookstore. I don't remember, but I've had it for quite a while. It's pretty yellow. I've read it about 3-4 times. It's a really interesting book, and it really twists your mind. It gets you thinking about different theories and about different things that we deal with theories of paranormal abilities. But it goes beyond that. It describes the entire universe as a hologram. So, and it tries to explain the paranormal as far as telepathy, psychokinesis, out-of-body and near-death experiences, lucid dreams, and even religious and mystical experiences. So, from what I remember, it was kind of – parts of it were kind of hard to follow. I had to go back and reread it a couple of times, you know, some of the things. And some of these theories kind of are far out trying to explain it. But when you first – the first chunk of it is really, really interesting, and who knows? You know, for me, I was kind of skeptical reading it. It was suggested reading by a member of my group at the time, who was trying to – he really believed heavily in the holographic universe and trying to get me on board with thinking outside of the paranormal box that I was currently thinking in, the way I was approaching things. My thought process on what ghosts were or are, I, again, tend to think with the traditional parapsychological view. But again, Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot is the book of the week. So if you get a chance, go to your local library, check it out, literally, and enjoy that book. And again, speaking of libraries, next week, October 26th, I'm going to be at the Westerville Public Library. Don't really even need to broadcast that because it's already been full for about a month and a half, and it's not only standing room only, but there's people waiting for other people to cancel to go to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Enjoy really getting out there. Enjoy libraries, period. It's a lot of fun to talk at those events. As far as paranormal conferences and conventions, there's only one coming up this weekend on my schedule, and that's the Port Gamble Ghost Conference, October 23rd through the 25th in Port Gamble, Washington. That's Washington State for all of us on the East Coast. And there's a couple in November, or one in November, the Old Mill Parafest, November 7th in Dundee, Michigan. And one I just added, it's kind of embarrassing, it's in my own backyard here. Angels and Aliens, Psychic Science and UFO Conference, takes place December 5th and 6th in Columbus, Ohio. And let's see, what do I have? Cryptozoology, ufology. Ufology is, do have the Mysteries of Space and Sky 2015 on October 24th in Gambrills, Maryland. And the Pittsburgh 2015 MUFON Conference takes place November 14th in Youngwood, Pennsylvania. And cryptozoology, we have the third annual Boggy Creek Festival that takes place October 23rd through the 25th in Fauk, Arkansas. Well, that's where the story started. And as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here as well as see it on the website, let me know by going to paranewsinsider.com and clicking on the about/contact link at the top of the page, or just email me old school style at insider@paranewsinsider.com and let me know what's going on. You know, I don't post everything and anything. I do have some paranormal classes, tours, guided hunts. I'm willing to do all that stuff, but it's really hard for me to go out there and get all this information and to put it on there. And, but I enjoy bringing it to the people. And I've said it once and I'll say it 100 times. These conferences and conventions are good. A lot of people don't like them. They think that they're a waste of time and they're nothing more than for the people's egos that speak to them or, you know, speak at them. Well, maybe it's true. I don't know. It is a lot of fun to, flaunt my knowledge and experience, but again, a conference is different than a convention. A conference is more scientific. It's less about me. It's more about what I'm doing and the things that are bigger than me. And a convention is, yes, a convention. That's where it is about the people that are there. It's not really about the work that they do, but what they're associated with, usually TV shows or things like that. And that's where you'll see some of the Comic-Cons and things like that that they fall into. As well, but I still will post either one, and they're good for their own thing. I mean, I'm not into going to see a convention. I could care less about the people that are on TV. I've met quite a few of them. A lot of them are nice people, but I'm not there for that. I don't show up for that. I show up to learn. I show up to listen to other people and learn from their experiences and their knowledge. This is the same as I'm doing here. Every Tuesday night here on cjmarsradio.com, giving you the information that you need to be more knowledgeable about the paranormal. And speaking about being more knowledgeable about the paranormal, stay tuned in an hour, 1 hour from now, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, for Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, as he has Mary Marshall, producer and radio host of the Paranormal MD Radio, paranormal investigator and a paranormal educator, a very knowledgeable person. I need my beauty sleep, but I might take a quick nap and listen into that show. And I suggest you do that as well. Frankly, great host, great show. And I'm not just kissing up because we're on the same network or he's had me on as a guest. It is a great show. I have to admit it. And with that, you know, I think we're going to be off next week. So I get a mini vacation. But I will be bringing the news to you once again the following week. And we're going to find out what's going on out there. And I'll bring you the Paranormal News Insider probably 2 weeks from now. And as always, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Don't stop believing. Believe.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
Hi there, this is Frank Lee. We're glad you've tuned in. The CJ Mars Radio Network is bringing you the best of paranormal radio. So be sure to check out our new lineup, including shows such as Half Past Dead Paranormal Radio with Roger Bell on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, and Paranormal News Insider with Dr. Brian Parsons on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, there's my show, Paranormalities and Ponderings, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. Then you don't want to miss Paranormal Experience with Kat Hobson on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. For an out-of-this-world show, be sure to tune in to Starlight 17 Radio with host Deborah Jane East, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Another show that you don't want to miss is Blackthorn Path with Auntie G and Mumsy V, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern. And finally, our newest addition to the lineup is The Paranormal Chronicles with G.L. Davies, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern. As you can see, we're bringing you the best of paranormal radio, so we can all learn together. So be sure and tune in so you don't miss out. We'll see you soon.